His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Vangacharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Pranjikava Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Rantavashana Bhagavatam Ki Nitai Gauri Po. Vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So today we're reading Canto 4, chapter 18, text number 5. Please repeat.
Text
Ananadrityayo vidam Autamarabhate svayam Tasya vyabhicharantyartha Aradascha punapunam Ananadrityayo vidam Artamarabhate svayam Hasa vyabhicharantyartha Aradascha punapunam Devotees Tamanadrita Matajis? Okay, so repeat please. Tam, those, anadritya, neglecting, yaha, anyone who, avidvam, rascal, artam, skins, Arabhate begins Swayam personally Tasya his Vyabhicharanti do not become successful Artaha purposes Arabha attempted Cha ends Puna Puna, again and again. A translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. A foolish person who manufactures his own ways and means through mental speculation and does not recognize the authority of the sages who lay down in impeccable directions is simply unsuccessful again and again in his attempts. Please repeat. A foolish person who manufactures his own ways and means through mental speculation and does not recognize the authority of the sages who lay down unimpeccable directions is simply unsuccessful again and again in his attempts. Jai, purported by His Divine Grace to the Prabhupada. At the present moment, it has become fashionable to disobey the unimpeachable directions given by the acharyas and liberated souls of the past. Presently, people are so fallen that they cannot distinguish between a liberated soul and a conditioned soul. A conditioned soul is hampered by four defects. He's sure to commit mistakes. He's sure to become illusioned. He has the tendency to cheat others. And his senses are imperfect. Consequently, we have to take directions from liberated persons. This Krishna conscious movement directly receives instructions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead by a person who are strictly following his instructions. Although a follower may not be a liberated person, if he follows the Supreme Liberated Personality of Godhead, his actions are naturally liberated from the contamination of the material nature. Lord Chaitanya therefore says, by my order you may become a spiritual master. One may immediately become a spiritual master by having full faith in the transcendental words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and by following his instructions. Materialistic men are not interested in taking direction from a liberated person, and they are very much interested in their own concocted ideas, which make them repeatedly fail in their attempts. Because the entire world is now following the imperfect direction of conditioned souls, humanity is completely bewildered. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnati Mirandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chakshuram Militan Jena Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasaji Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Mancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the verse says, a foolish person who manufactures his own ways and means through mental speculation and does not recognize the authority of the sages who lay down unimpeccable directions is simply unsuccessful again and again in his attempts. So first I'd like to have your permission, especially from the senior devotees and blessings, so I can share a few thoughts, a few realizations on this topic. So here, Bhumi Devi, she has recognized her dependence on the Supreme Lord, as spoken very nicely by His Grace Harishaura Prabhu. She finally understood that no one in this world can be independent from the Lord. Everyone, every single living entity must depend on the Supreme Lord, because He is Adipurusham, and all and everything, everyone comes from Him. In that sense, we are all dependent of Him. So Bhumi Devi has come to realize her dependence on the Lord. Now she is giving a deeper step into developing a relationship with the Lord. Because first she had the idea that the sacrifices were not being done properly, and human beings were just taking the riches of the nature, everything which was supplied by Krishna himself through his agents, they're just taking for sense gratification. And then Prithu came and reestablished the Brahminical system, the advisory Brahminical system. And now she has recognized that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in front of her. And by recognizing that, by understanding that inside her identity, inside her sambandha, understanding that she is a part and parcel of this Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that her duty, her final duty, would be to surrender to Him, she now is developing symptoms of surrender. So in this verse, she's glorifying the Lord through the sages and the parampara, because she's saying that people who do not follow the sages and the system of knowledge given by the Lord, the authorized system of knowledge, so every one of us can be happy in this life and the next life, by following the person who represents all attractiveness, because Krishna means all attractiveness, we will definitely feel attracted to what is auspicious and blissful. So he's recognizing this position. She's recognizing that we should follow this system which has been so nicely delivered by so many sages. If you just consider how much blood has been circulated just that this knowledge comes to this present moment. How many innumerable hours have the sages in the Parampara taken just so that we could have this knowledge right now. When Krishna is leaving the planet, he's asked what's going to be after he leaves the planet. And he says, I'll be here in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It represents the truth. That's the knowledge which comes from the transcendence. Now this point is very interesting because Bhumi is dividing two types of person. A person who manufactures his own means and ways and a person who follows. She's separating that. And that's a glorification to the Lord, because if we understand how the creation takes place, when the Lord desires that the material world manifests for the benefit of the living entities, who wants to have an experience, he simply imparts a part of Ahankara into the Pradhan, and automatically the Mahatattva is formed. Another part of Ahankara is there, and then the ego is formed. And so on. He's giving parts of Ahankara, and then you have the mind, and then you have the intelligence, then the mind, the ether, and then you have the air, the fire, water, and finally earth. So earth is the element which carries in itself the biggest quantity of Ahankara. So it's not to be, we are not surprised when someone is so desperately defending his own land, because that's where the biggest dose, the biggest proportion of the element Ahankara is put by the Lord. So you see people fighting and fighting over pieces of land since time immemorial. You see the Middle East is going over land for how long? You see wars everywhere, because that's where my homeland, my town, my house, my body is the final desha of this place. And here Bhumi is saying that if we get identified with this external manifestation, we will end up with our own ways and means. Now if we see that the only way of not going through our ways and means is to recognize and to understand what is this directions given by the sages through time immemorial coming from Krishna, that's exactly the answer. Because by identifying ourselves with the material nature, our sambandhagyan, our identity gets reflected. We start to see ourselves as product of that place, of that energy, of that manifestation, of that culture. And gradually, as a greater and greater number of people adopt that culture, we just take it as granted. Isn't it like that? And many places say, oh, my grandfather used to do that. So that's the way it is. My great-grandfather used to do that. So, Ahankara is a very strong energy, and a little bit of it is put into ourselves. And if this little bit which is within ourselves is identified with this greater element of Ahankara, immediately I experience a sense of I control and I enjoy it. Because the center of I. Now, the people who have trailed the way of searching for the truth. If we read Srila His Holiness Radhanatha Swami Maharaj book, Journey Home, we immediately are overjoyed to see the search of a genuine disciple looking for a genuine guru, a genuine master. And he goes through the major efforts we have in the planet. He goes through the yoga, he goes through the Buddhists, he goes through the impersonalists, and he finally reaches Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, he could recognize, even though not immediately, the truth, because he was looking for his original identity, his original position. And he could recognize when he saw it, because there was a genuine search. And through the genuine search, you have a genuine find. So, Bhumi has already made this distinction. Now, if we look at the mind, which will be the element of identification, we'll see that the mind should be controlled by the intelligence, because that's the way it is. Intelligence is superior to the mind. But as it is perceived, many times the mind does control the intelligence. Let's take an example of someone who smokes. He knows smoking is bad for him. The intelligence is saying, if you smoke, you have lung cancer. Yet he cannot stop. Why he cannot stop? Because the mind crosses the intelligence and controls the intelligence, and then the person smokes. Oh, just this time. Or if the person is addicted to alcohol, he understands. I feel very bad the other day, I had nausea, and through the years I have so many diseases with liver and everything. But he cannot stop. Why? Because his mind has identified with that. He feels that that experience is valid and important for his growth. His sambandhagyan has taken that element as part of itself. And because of that, he's trailing the three modes of material nature. Now, when the knowledge given by the sages come, when it descends, because of its transcendental nature, it makes the intelligence go up to a transcendental position. And in a transcendental position, the mind follows. And a transcendental mind is not possessive, because a transcendental mind has posed itself as a servant of the Lord. And as a servant of the Lord, the mind can accept to surrender to the Lord. And in that surrender, the mind can cooperate with the intelligence and follow the intelligence given by the sage. So, a person who has listened to the Srimad Bhagavatam with the idea given by the sages, which is to understand the ultimate goal of life, this person will reach this position because his intelligence has become a transcendental intelligence. And his mind, which was initially contemplating an identity which encompassed the material nature, now encompasses the spiritual nature. So the mind starts to cooperate and desire to relish the transcendental pastime of the Lord within. The mind wants to see. You just see these devotees who are very enthusiastic. You see, who's speaking? Where is the talk? Where is the kirtan? Where is the bhajan? Because the mind is desiring to hear about the Lord. The mind is cooperating. The mind can be the worst enemy, and it can be the best friend. The transcendental mind is the best friend, because the transcendental mind not only accepts, but is desiring that we go back to Godhead. The mind is desiring that we associate with devotees, that we serve devotees, that we are humble. While the material mind is seeking for privilege, is seeking for recognition, is seeking for enjoyment. So the main duty of this mission is to lead the mind to its original position, to its transcendental position. And this is the message given by the Parampara and by all the sages. Now, by saying this, Bhumi is also indirectly stating that the central goal of life, the central goal of the Vedas, is to surrender to Krishna. That's the main pillar which holds all the other instructions of the Vedas. And within that main instructions, you have many secondary instructions. And an immediate secondary instruction is always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Always remember Krishna is related to the positive, to the chanting. Chanting 24 hours, so you are in contact with Krishna. So your mind is taking the constant association of the Lord. The mind is there, willing to chant, willing to serve the Lord by chanting and hearing the holy names. That's why Prabhupada says, when you chant in japa, the most important element is simply to hear. Because if you hear, you're actually doing a service to the holy name. You're posing yourself as an instrument of the Lord, which is our original position. And by putting yourself as the original instrument of the Lord, automatically we take the same pleasure as the Lord does. And then our heart is blissful, just because we are hearing the holy names. So actually, it's a very sweet arrangement of the Lord that in Kali Yuga, when our mind is so disturbed and unwilling to transcend, we have the holy name as a means of transcendence. So it becomes easy in a way. All we have to do is to pose ourselves as instruments of the Lord so we can understand and receive this message given by the Lord through the parampara. That's an important point Bhumi is also stating. A secondary conclusion is for the people who are not doing that. So she calls them foolish, and that's a strong statement to call someone foolish. Now if you go to any parliament, either in Europe, in America, in any country, they don't consider themselves foolish. They consider themselves very educated, very special, very different from the main population, because they have reached that position. But through their plans, they cannot achieve much. They made plans, for example, just now we had a war break in Iraq. So many plans to go there and restore the situation, but they just didn't give any result. Much on the contrary, they spent money, left without any tangible result. Right? They even lost faith by the population, because they invested so much and so little result was given back. So many countries were involved. Because they think that by their plans they'll be able to install a system. They're saying, we're going to give peace to Iraq. But they're just giving more trouble, more war, more hatred between people. Because, why is that? Because they have not found the formula of peace. If they had read the Bhagavad Gita, they would have found that. I read very recently on the internet that His Holiness Radhanatha Swami was having a talk with Barack Obama, the new president of America. And these initiatives to convince the leadership that we should take advantage of knowledge which can really solve, they're very appreciated. Because here, Bhumi Devi is calling all these people foolish. Because they have taken their own values as valid. But that's only material nature, transformation of dead matter. It doesn't matter, it's only dead. It's only transferring dead matter from one place to another. You take $1 trillion of oil from Iraq, put it in another place, burn it. It's only dead matter, it doesn't matter. In the end, it will be transformed back to pradhan. And that's it. So, all these plans which are given in all the different fields, they are simply disturbing the natural system given by the Lord. And by not perceiving this, we are bewildered. Prabhupada says right here at the end of his so well-written purport, because the entire world is now following the imperfect direction of conditioned soul, humanity is completely bewildered. Completely bewildered. Now, the main talk in Europe is the crisis, the economical crisis. Again, leaders have lost track of how economy is run. And by the way, if we track down the origin of two words, if as spoken by the Greek, ecology and economy. Eco would be house, and logi, study. So ecology is a study of the house. And economy, house, and nomi, organization, the organization of the house. So ecology and economy are two sciences which are very well described in the Vedas. So nicely described. Because the house is the planet, and Bhumi here is trying to put order in the house. She's trying to say how things should be done. In this very moment in the planet, we have so many ecological movements, but they do not know how to run the ecological movements. They're creating their own ideas of ecology, and it does not work. You see an ecology crying over animals being killed in the poles, but they just eat a beef for lunch. You see an ecology saying that we should save the rainforest, we should save the forest, but he himself is being so aggressive towards his own fellowship, his own family, his own people. So, if we create these systems, we will tend to have unsuccess. Again and again. This is said by Srila Prabhupada. Again and again, this will be unsuccessful. Now this is a very important point because the philosophy brings about a culture, brings about a style of life. And if we have the patience to contemplate the Vedic lifestyle, we'll find so many solutions to our life problems. Just for example, I heard from a Bengali teacher that in Bengali you don't say, I am getting married. You say, marriage has come to me. So the idea is that by a divine arrangement, it has come to you. It's not you, the controller, who went there, saw a beautiful partner, and by your arrangement, you are marrying. The Lord has given it to you. And talking about Vedic lifestyle, we were blessed this week in the community with a great explanation of how communities work by His Grace Radhasham Prabhu. And in that lecture, he gave his personal example, which I, with his permission, will share with you, which is very beautiful. He mentioned how he was brought up in a village where the center of the village was the temple of Lord Vishnu. And the whole village worked around the temple. Everybody was happy to serve the temple. Everybody was talking, how should I attend the programs? And he mentioned that if a woman or a couple was burdened, they had already many children, and a newly born child came, voluntarily someone would come and say, no, let two of your sons come to my house for 1 year, not a week, for 1 year. Why you have time to get acquainted with the new come? So this is culture. This brings up community, very strong bonds, which will last for a whole life long. We would be amazed today if, as a devotee, you would say, no, let your children come for 2 weeks, let's say 1 week to my house. You say, oh God, I have so much to do, I don't know if I could fit in these kids, they are so noisy, jumping around. But then, in those times, and I could see in his lecture what strong affection he had to those memories. It was there in his memories. We could just taste it from his memories. How he felt so sheltered by the community. And why was that? Because the community had the culture to depend on the Lord, had the culture to offer goods and flowers to the Lord. If you had something good, you first thought, oh, I'm going to take this to the deity. Because this is so good, I think the deity is going to enjoy that. And by having that culture, Krishna was pleased, and the whole village was running around Krishna. And similarly, he was mentioning so many examples, how when someone had to settle the marriage of a daughter, a match would be found quickly. And this brought in very strong community commitments. It brought about love and trust. It brought about the feeling that I could depend on the land to survive. That I did not need to make my own very sophisticated arrangement. So just making a parallel, I'll come back to his pastime, which I really enjoyed inside my heart. I lived in India when I was a teenager, and these examples of the Indian culture, they were like a mystical film running in my mind. I could not pin down what was mystical about it, but I was enjoying them. I could enjoy the pictures in books. Of course, the people many times told of the demigods just as mythology. But even then, I felt attracted to them as something special. And I could not tell why, but I was. So I'll just make a parallel and go to our understanding of agriculture. So taking this example, how modern culture tends to create his own philosophies. Just take the philosophy of modern agriculture. It's simply, I control and I enjoy the results. I control the soil. I can beat the soil dead, and then I'll put as many kilos of fertilizer as I need, and I'll produce as much as I want. That's the main philosophy. It doesn't matter if there's a disease, I will control with very strong fungicides, pesticides, chemicals, whatever you say. It doesn't matter if there's a revolution, the labor go away, because with one man I can plow 1,000 hectares with my machines. I can just wipe out the whole populations of the countryside and myself run everything on my machines. We see that. We see that in all these new agriculture frontier countries. North America, South America, you see that even Europe has gone through that. Now what is the consequence? The city becomes flooded of people. You have so much hunger, so much violence, that you think you're going to the town to enjoy the shopping center, these beautiful facilities, and then there's a gun in your head. Pass over your car. So what arrangement is that? You're so fearful that you have to roll up your window panes and put air conditioner and be so isolated. Put your walls 3 meters high because someone is going to jump and steal all your goods. So what beauty is in that arrangement? Is there any beauty there? But you still don't, oh, I'm very happy. I have my car, I have my yacht, I have all my fields, my country house, my beach house, my everything. But can you enjoy it? Now, if we go back to that beautiful image of this Vedic village, where His Grace Radhasham Prabhu was brought, and I'm sure so many of you who have joined ISKCON were living, you could see respect for the elderly. You could see that before going to class, His Holiness Lokanath Swami in that beautiful video Lost Village presents so beautifully, you know, that the young students would come to the elderly to get blessings, to get knowledge. And the elderly felt so useful, because they were the containers of knowledge. They were the reservoir of all this tradition given by the sages. It was not only concentrated in the sadhu, it was dispersed in the population. And the elderly were the people who were the highest containers of this knowledge, of this culture, of the subtle elements, how to dress, how to deal with people, how to solve conflicts, how to go to the temple, how to wash your feet before you get into a temple. So many small details which were passed on by the mother, who was the jewel of the house. She knew all of this. She nourished the family so nicely. So her dependence was gifted as being the crown of the house. Everybody respected the mother because she was the crown jewel of the house. And she was the container of all this knowledge in her behavior, in her cooking, in her going to the temple, in her dealing with neighbors. That was distributed in her behavior, in her culture. And Srila Prabhupada has taught us that. He has taught us how to cook, how to dress, how to marry, how to chant, how to live in communities, how to develop the farms. He has taught everything. And we should take advantage of that, because such a liberated soul is not a common an everyday event. It's a very special event. And through his teachings, we can learn how to absorb this culture by contemplation rather than by mental fight. Yes, but I'm so attached to eating this and doing this way. That's not practical for me. That's so Vedic, is so distant. But if you try to contemplate the principle behind it, you find happiness. And it could apply anywhere, any place, anytime. But the principle must be there. And here the main principle that Bhumi is saying, that our main goal is to understand the sages and go back to Godhead. And that message has been protected without a stain by these sages. Because their main duty was to protect Dharma, to protect knowledge, to protect Krishna Katha. And through that knowledge, all of us now can benefit. All of us can go back to Godhead. So I'd like to finish here. And I'm sure there are many senior devotees, very experienced devotees here, which could complement what I have not fully said. Thank you very much for your attention. I'm sorry if you said something which was not pleasant. Okay. Any questions, comments? Very welcome.
Thank you for the lecture. It was very inspiring to hear. And I have one question. Why in our society all the attempts to build rural community is permanently failing? And only successful communities which we know, or the most successful would be Mumbai, most probably Chaupati, which is not rural at all, and I guess Pune. So city communities. So where the problem lies?
Okay, very nice question. Indeed, this question has been spoken in many yatras, in many places, and we are all looking for the answer. I could say, if you look at a tradition, like I just mentioned, from the example of His Grace, Radhashyam Prabhu, how many years has that village taken to come to that point? How many generations? We've done attempts, genuine attempts. I've been to communities with, I could not say people are not genuine in their attempts, they are not sincere, they were. But to grasp subtleties of relationship takes a long time. We have to remember that Prabhupada preached for the community, the fast generation, fast food generation. Everything is for yesterday and ready and on my hand. So if you say that, okay, let's go to India, spend about 20 years starting a community, and then we start a community, everybody just jump from their seats, what, are you crazy? But if you see these communities, they have been started by many generations, following a tradition of many thousands of years. And our restless Western mind wants results for now. And that's one of the problems. The second problem is that we do believe in our means. We still have this contamination, if you could put it that way, that our technological assets are more relevant than the technology which is simple, natural and divine. And for us to accept this divine living, just picture a devotee living on the country, farming, worshipping the deity, associating with devotees, respecting the elderly, attending Srimad Bhagavatam, with no anxiety about maintenance, fully dependent on the land. Wouldn't that be a perfect picture? We could do a painting with that, couldn't we? But why we're not doing that yet? Because we're still attached to so many things, like the comfort of the urban life, the facilities of the urban life. And that takes a little time. But it will come. because Srila Prabhupada wanted, Sri Chaitanya desired, it's bound to happen. It's a question of time. Okay? I think Prabhuji had a question there. Prabhu? You have a question?
A comment.
In the current world situation, we can see that actually what's happening to our ecology, because the materialists are actually destroying Mother Bhumi, and she's withdrawing everything now, and the world is basically falling apart. And yet, the materialists, they said, well, just make genetically modified crops and it'll solve everybody's problem. You know what I mean? So actually everything you're saying is 100% correct, but what I fear is that in our society, we haven't moved fast enough to establish farming communities, because the things are coming really quickly to a head. Have you any comment about that? Things are really falling apart in the material world. And the devotees will actually, when push comes to shove, there will be no, in the West especially, there will be no food on the shelves. People may be having cars, but they won't be able to afford gasoline. And millions of people already, we can see in the United States, are out of work, including devotees. I have one godbrother in America, he was looking for a job for 7 years. And he's 40 years old. And he's been looking for a job for 7 years. So the whole material thing is falling apart at the seams. So we have to actually do with this Van Ashram project. And we have to get the ball rolling quick, because things are accelerating. Do you have any comment to make about that?
Yeah. Well, for your friend, I got a suggestion for us from a Swami. I liked it very much. It says, if any devotee simply makes cheese in the West, he'll be rich. because devotees like so much pizzas and all these things just go together. So you always can find a solution. Now, talking about the Van Ashram project, it is imperative that we make it. It is imperative. Because we'll be judged by our success to do it. And we have a great risk that people come to us and say, you have land, you have money, yet you do not farm, you do not depend on the project which you're saying, you do not reproduce the philosophy which you profess. So where is the consistency? That criticism we might face very, very, very strongly. On the other hand, if we look at Cuba, for example, there was the oil peak. Cuba was simply in a crisis. No food, everything fell apart. And everybody started farming, doing home gardens. So Cuba is known now as the urban gardens. Everybody has a little vegetable garden, because they learn how to do it from this crisis. They face the immediate problem, then they found a solution. Doubtless, Bhumi is withdrawing her blessings, and people are not seeing that, and they are understanding that by my plants, my chemicals, my genetically modified, my whatever solution, I'm solving it. But the time will show it won't solve. Right? As His Grace Harishori Prabhu pointed out about genetically modified, we have not yet seen what these genes will provoke in the future. When something very strange pops up, we may be concerned. Now, as devotees, we should be very concerned how to bring about this very peaceful style of living. Because if you just see, many devotees have problem working, because we have a system which is depending on a very external element. You live in a community, you go out, bring your money in. Once you have your money, you're only spending. So if you're spending, you're not willing to give away, because you have a limited resource. You know? So, donation to a festival, you calculate, oh, how much can I give? I have to live until December. Now, if you live on the land, and you, let's say you got 1,000 pumpkins, you say, no, let me keep 1,000 pumpkins because I have to live until December. No, it will rot away. So what do? You give away automatically. So the feeling of giving is there. Because you have so much, what are you going to do? You're going to let it rot? That's going to look very bad on you. I prefer to rot my pumpkins than to give away to my friends. Right? You may even say, it's too hard to go and market it and sell it, put it, oh, I know, I'm not going to bother that. But I'm going to give as much as I can. And then you do it. I just have an example. Vishwatmadeva Prabhu took me to his land, and he had a production of this very tasty sabji lao, so many of them. And he said, wow, I had a whole field, I didn't know what to do, I was in Switzerland, so I said, give away to the temple, give away to the devotees. But still there was like 100 which rotted away, and he was very sad, oh, I lost that. But just imagine if that was Lakshmi. He's like, you had like 1,000 rupees rotting away on the corner. Oh, my 1,000 rupees are rotting, I don't know, do you say that? No. Yeah, I'm going to get it again and spend it somewhere else. So there is a system. If it comes by a divine arrangement, you give it. People gave away so much in the rural areas. You'd be amazed by the charity of the Vrajavasis, of the people in the country life. If you don't even know them, they'll say, come to my house, I'll give you shelter. I know many of you have this experience. If you go on Madhukar, you have this experience. You know, people giving away. Why? Because it has been brought out, the feeling of sharing, the feeling of dependence on the Lord. I'm not depending on my business giving me the money, I'm depending on the Lord, so I can share. I can give my time, I can give my sabji, I can give whatever I have, because it has been given by the Lord. So that's why when we talk about Varnashram, we go to rural communities. Because that's the most clear and easy way to visualize a community, isn't it? You see everybody farming, you can see the Brahmins worshipping, you can see all the Varnas very well distributed. But what about urban Varnashram? In Krishna time there was cities, right? So there must be urban Varnashram. There'll be Vaishyas, there'll be Shudras, there'll be Kshatriyas, and there'll be Brahmins. Varnashram is going on too. So we have to find the balance. We have to find the balance. A Vaishya will be a Vaishya on the countryside or on the urban city. You don't need to say anything. He'll find a way to get his money. So Srila Prabhupada stressed so much on creating a Brahminical culture, because from the Brahminical culture everything else derives. Someone mentioned, I love the sentence, a Brahman is a one stop Prabhu, because he'll tell you everything you need. You know about Vastu, you know about society, you know about worship, you know about marriage, you know about everything. Because he's had the time to study. That's what he did. He studied the Vedas and took on a very simple living, voluntarily. Because he's done that voluntarily, all the respect goes to him. Now just look at what an incredible balance. The Brahman has all the respect, but at the same time he does not want any respect. So that's perfect. He has all the power, but he does not want the power. But right here, the king thought he was very smart, King Vina. And they just by his power, their power, said, you die! And he immediately died. But that's the power of a Brahman. And by the same power of the Brahman, he invoked Prithu Maharaj and his wife, and both of them were just perfect rulers. So that's the power of a Brahman. The Brahman, what to say of a Vaishnava, which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta attended a meeting which his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was called to prove who was superior, a Brahman or a Vaishnava. And he just said something so beautiful. He glorified the Brahman, but at the end he said, Vaishnava is one who surrenders to Vishnu. And that's very rare. How many have surrendered to Vishnu? So, this person has all the power, but has all the well-wishing, all the desire to benefit the others. You see? So, within this Vedic lifestyle, we can find everything we need. And that's what Prabhupada wanted. Prabhupada wanted that we had a community where love and trust could be accomplished. He said, I have built a house where everyone can come and live. He built an ashram for the brahmacharis. He built a community for the grihasthas. He built forests for the vanaprasthas. And he built so many people to preach for the sannyasis. So he built a house where everyone can be. Everyone can live under his shelter. That's his special characteristics. And we should understand how all the varnas come together. Right? Just like, I'll finish with this as time is going by. Just as the picture of the, I'll take this village as an example for myself of His Grace Radhasham Prabhu. Just as this village, I offer my obeisances to these villages. And all the villages which follow this system. How much we have to learn, how much homework we have to do, how much culture we have to understand. It's a lot of work. But thank you very much for your attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.